This is the son of PCJ.
Media Network Plus, produced and presented by Paulette McQuarrie and Keith Perron.
Hello, friends, and welcome to the program. Today we're going to be looking at an international organization that, if it was not for them, all forms of electrical communication would not be possible. I mean everything from shortwave, FM, medium wave, satellite, and the internet. Who am I talking about? Well, I'm talking about the ITU, or International Telecommunications Union. Australia's 24-hour television service, seen across the Asia-Pacific, is in limbo. Who will operate the channel for the Australian government? The ABC or Rupert Murdoch's group Sky? Well, it seems that this is all in the air for the moment, as the tender process for a 10-year contract has been cancelled. We'll have a special report on what happened. And of course, Dan Hensley will join us for a look at the next 7 days of propagation. Media Network Plus doing a tightrope act across the long wire antenna. First, here's Paulette with a look at some of the headlines from the world of communications.
As of November 10, 2011, foreign and foreign-controlled entities will not be allowed to become the founder of a radio channel or to acquire over 50% of shares in a radio channel which broadcasts to more than one-half of the territorial subjects of Russia or over the territory on which one-half or more of Russia's population resides. Earlier, such restriction applied only to television channels, but has now been extended to include radio channels as well. Licenses for radio and television broadcasting will not be issued or renewed to companies which do not comply with this restriction. Andorran public broadcaster RTVA has decided to leave the European Broadcasting Union. The company's economic weakness has led the board to take this measure. By the end of 2010, the Andorran public broadcaster had a debt of 3.618 million euro, a sum much higher than permitted by the law that created RTVA. Moreover, the public subsidy that RTVA receives from the government will drop from 3.4 million euro in 2011 to 2.8 million euro in 2012. RTVA will make other severe cuts in order to restructure its finances. Currently, RTVA has a total of 100 employees, and it is expected that only 82 will remain with the broadcaster after the adjustments. Also, some other bilateral agreements with news agencies and other contracts will be cancelled. This past Wednesday evening, Southwest Radio Africa, or SWRA, found its shortwave broadcast being jammed by the Mugabe regime. Ironically, jamming began after the news bulletin, and just as an interview on Question Time was about to begin with ZANU-PF spokesman Rigari Gumbo. Mugabe's regime began jamming SWRA frequencies in 2005, just before the controversial Operation Murumbatsvina. It was reported that the jamming equipment and expertise was provided by China, and at the time, SWRA spoke to a soldier who says he was sent to China to be trained in jamming techniques. Since then, the jamming has been intermittent and often targets SWRA's flagship newsreel bulletin, using a loud and irritating noise to drown out the broadcast. In March 2007, then-Deputy Information Minister Bright Matonga admitted they were jamming the SWRA broadcast. He told Parliament they were generating electronic interference to prevent reception. Southwest Radio Africa is run by exiled Zimbabweans who, because of repressive media legislation, are not allowed to broadcast from home. In 2000, the station, then called Capital Radio, challenged the government's broadcasting monopoly and won its case in the Supreme Court. But after just 6 days of broadcasting, the station was shut down by Mugabe using his presidential powers and with a bit of help from armed paramilitary. Satlink Communications has announced that it is adding services in sub-Saharan Africa with new Ku-band capacity on the soon-to-be-launched Amos-5 satellite. The new KU band will take advantage of Satlink's strategic location, added value broadcast services, and playout solutions to maximize the company's position as a gateway to Africa for international and local broadcasters. As a provider of global TV distribution services, Satlink offers a variety of solutions to access Africa, said Satlink CEO David Hotchner. We are excited to add more C-band and KU-band platforms on Amos 5 at 17 degrees east that complement our African distribution via other satellites. Africa is a growing market, and we look forward to enabling more broadcasters to reach their audiences, he said. Special thanks to Andy Sennett at the Radio Netherlands Worldwide Media Network blog for the material used here today. For more reports from Andy, check out his blog, http://blogs.rnw.nl/media network. Or you can find a link to it at www.pcjmedia.com.
Established on May 17, 1865, the International Telecommunications Union, or ITU, based in Geneva, Switzerland, has played an important role in making international communications a reality. Everything that we use or take for granted, like radio, television, satellite, the internet, mobile phones, software applications like Skype, I mean everything, would not be possible if it was not for this intergovernmental organization. Our correspondent in Switzerland, Bob Zanotti, now joins us for more details on the work that they do.
I personally have been down at the ITU many, many times when I was working at Swiss Radio International. I used to report on telecommunication issues and so on. And a thumbnail history. The ITU, like a few of the other UN specialized agencies, as they're officially called, were created for a very, very good reason. They're very pragmatic. They're not political organizations. They're technical organizations. The International Telecommunication Union used to be called and was founded, I believe, in 1884 as the International Telegraph Union. And, of course, for those who don't know, and maybe some people don't, in those days, there was only one means of international communication, and that was the telegraph. International telephone service was not even thought of at the time. And so the need was there to coordinate the efforts and the technical standards of telegraph service all over the world. And then later on in the 20th century, this evolved as technology evolved. Things got sophisticated. We had radio, we had telephone, we had television, and that called for a more sophisticated organization, and it was renamed and reorganized and called the ITU, International Telecommunication Union.
So, in effect, the ITU looks over almost everything that we use, from just, you know, like you mentioned, telegrams to modern internet communications to telephone calls to satellite. They really oversee the whole gamut of telecommunications.
Well, let me put it to you this way, Keith. I'm a critical, in the best sense of the word, I'm a critical journalist. And I can tell you in all truth and honesty, the ITU is one of the best functioning and most important organizations within the family of United Nations specialized agencies. It's up there, for example, with the World Health Organization, with the World Meteorological Organization, which coordinates observation and data transfer on the world's weather. I think, for example, here in Bern, rather exceptionally, the UPU, the Universal Postal Union, which was founded in Bern around the same time as the Telegraph Union. Without these organizations, the world's communications, the data transfer would not function. You and I, and this is not a dramatization or over-dramatization or melodrama, you and I literally could not talk right now over Skype without the ITU. I'll tell you why. It's simply because in the evolution of international communication, electronic communication, every nation developed its own standards. and they had to be coordinated. For example, it seems very simple to pick up a telephone today, and we can talk all over the world. Nobody thinks about it. There are international access codes. But behind that are international agreements among all the members of the ITU that coordinate and permit the access of this international telephony, interfacing from one system to the other. Not all telephone standards are the same. We have the same thing in radio, television. For example, let's take our favorite subject, shortwave broadcasting, even medium wave, FM broadcasting. All the world has to agree on what frequencies are allocated for these services. How big is the audio bandwidth going to be? And then we have the issue of coordinating all of these frequencies internationally so that everybody doesn't wind up on the same frequency. This is the daily job of the ITU.
One final question, Bob, because we're nearly out of time. You were in broadcasting for many years. When you got together with your broadcasting colleagues, what is the industry's feeling towards the ITU?
Well, it depends whether in the West or the East, and it depends whether we're talking about the Cold War or the modern day. Some cynics would say, possibly correctly, that in the days of the Cold War, they laughed at the ITU because nobody followed it. The Russians did what they wanted. I mean, the Soviets did what they wanted. They jammed blatantly. They moved around. They went outside a band. I mean, it was just a farce. But I think today you'll find that the ITU structure is taken seriously, because I go back to what we said at the very beginning. Now that the Cold War has been more or less settled, not completely, we just have, I'm listening on the 10-meter ham band here, we have Russian taxi services all over the 10-meter amateur band. They don't belong there, and the Russians don't care. So, I mean, that aspect of the Russians are still doing what they care, what they want, and don't care, and they thumb their noses. But I would say it's the old story, Keith. If the ITU didn't exist, somebody would have to invent it. So I would say I would say civilized people, civilized governments, and civilized telecom administrations are glad that the ITU exists. It's a pragmatic and very useful organization.
Bob Zanotti, thank you very much for joining us today.
My pleasure, Keith, as always.
The Australian government has found itself in a tangle over the contract to televise Australia to the world. The tender for the 10-year, 233 million Australia network is in contest between Sky News and the Australian Broadcasting Corporation. Australia Network is funded by the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade in Canberra, managed by the ABC, and beams to dozens of countries across the Asia-Pacific region. The drawn-out tender process has prompted claims of political interference and deliberate leaks on who should win the contract. Mike Woods of Radio Australia has the story.
The federal government should have just said, look, real countries don't outsource their PR to private enterprise. I think the government should just say, that's it, no more, the ABC's got it. Or they should say, well, it's a waste of money, we're canning it.
The ABC got it 10 years ago because no one else wanted it at the time. I don't think that means that the ABC should continue to get it, and I'm not taking sides either way. But I do think the people of Australia deserve a bit better than what they've got at the moment.
Media commentators Glenn Dyer and Malcolm Collis and two very different views about the Australia Network contract. Most Australians have little knowledge of Australia Network because it is not broadcast domestically. The aim of the service is to provide a window on Australia and Australian perspectives on the world. Last year, the federal government called for tenders to supply the service for the next decade. That happened after Sky News Australia called for a competitive process for the rights to broadcast Australia to the world. Sky News Australia is owned by the Nine and Seven television networks and Rupert Murdoch's BSkyB cable channel. While Sky News Australia and the ABC can't comment on their bids, in the past the ABC has argued that the public broadcaster is better positioned to serve Australia's soft policy interests internationally. Sky believes it can provide the same standard of service and unveiled what many saw as its trump card earlier this year, a reciprocal programming deal with China's state television service, CCTV. In May, a panel comprising senior bureaucrats from the departments of Treasury, Finance, Foreign Affairs and Communications is believed to have given the nod to the Sky News bid. But then the government stepped in, set aside the panel's recommendation, and in July set new criteria and reopened the tender. The government cited changed international circumstances relating to the Arab Spring uprisings for the move. The government also stripped the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade of the right to decide the winning bid, handing it to Communications Minister Stephen Conroy. The decision will now be made by Cabinet on the advice of the Minister. Glenn Dyer is the media and finance writer for the Crikey website. He says the first mistake the government made was allowing a panel of bureaucrats to evaluate and make recommendations on the tenders.
Public servants who have no understanding of the media world and the way that the media does its business. And that, to me, is the most fatal error of all. In attempting to take it out of a political context, i.e. cabinet, and the foreign minister and give it to public servants, it's given it to people who live in this cloistered world in Canberra and have no history whatsoever and obviously no reading and no knowledge of the background of News Corporation, Sky News and the ABC for that matter.
The recommendations of both the first and second advisory panels were leaked to the media. In both cases, it said the panels were unanimous in their support for the Sky News bid. Malcolm Collis is a journalist, media commentator and former director of News Limited. He says the ABC is not the only organisation capable of delivering soft diplomacy to a global audience. Malcolm Collis says he also believes that the ABC may have been a little overconfident about its chances of retaining the Australian Network contract, and that may have been reflected in its tender.
There certainly seemed to be a view that no one other than the ABC, and particularly not a commercial enterprise run by Rupert Murdoch or dominated by Rupert Murdoch, should conduct this service because a public broadcaster was the only entity that had the wherewithal to be able to do it and could be seen as being completely unbiased. I don't share that view. I think what we've got to look at is the depth of service that can be taken to the various regions around the Pacific and Asia and other parts of the world. And I suppose when you look at it from that context, you have to ask whether the ABC has been resting on the oars, believing that at the end of the day, it would be seen as being the only vehicle that could meet those requirements.
Malcolm Collis says while the bungling of the Australian Network tender process won't cost the government any votes, it raises questions about transparency and openness. He says the government's indecision also places great strain on Australia Network and its resources.
You've got to remember, this thing has been dragging on since before Julia Gillard took over from Kevin Rudd as Prime Minister. What I think it's done has created a very clear image of a government that can't seem to, you know, get on with it and make a decision. I mean, I think it's appalling that the situation has got to a point where Australia Network is basically shriveling up in the sun.
Bruce Haig is a former Australian diplomat. He worked for the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade for more than 25 years. While many see the reciprocal TV rights deal with China as the jewel in the crown of the Sky News bid, Bruce Haig says he believes the agreement between Sky and China's state television service is a concern.
Yes, it is a concern because with any deal like that, there has to be compromise. And so one presumes that the Chinese will have some ability to censor what Sky says about what they regard as sensitive aspects of policy, their policy. They've undermined themselves by getting into a deal with the Chinese government, given the nature of government in China.
Bruce Haig says Australia Network's job is to showcase Australia's national values, and he questions how such a service provided by a commercial television network would be accepted in the region.
It's not going to have the same credibility. As much as some countries in the region might have railed against Radio Australia, nonetheless they listened to it. And I know that from my time in DFAT. What's required with a service like this is that it has some high degree of credibility, and people feel that what is put out they can rely upon. And that's really important in a region where you don't necessarily have the strongest of democratic institutions. So if you're beaming into places like Burma and China, you want to be able to put the position as it is in a manner that can't be received by people within those countries because of censorship and restrictions by their governments.
And that report came to us from Mike Woods of Radio Australia. And by the way, you're listening to Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio. Here's something very unusual. Now, PCJ is commercial-free. We don't run any commercials except for show promotions inside our programs, which is a good thing. But radio stations that need, of course, to have advertising, to raise funds for the station, you kind of wonder what goes through their minds sometime about certain ads that they will take. Well, recently, there was a radio ad that drew a lot of fire. And by the way, that's sort of a play on words, because there was a Texas gun dealer by the name of Crockett Keller who had an ad that ran on KVUE in Mason, Texas. Now, listen to it and you'll understand why this ad drew fire. And I kind of wonder, what was the advertising department thinking at the time?
Hello, friends and neighbors in Mason and surrounding counties. Attention, be a victor, not a victim. We will be having a beginner's concealed handgun class this coming Wednesday, October 26th, at Keller's Riverside Store on the beautiful Llano River. Classes start at 8:30 a.m. This is an all-day event. We will attempt to teach you all the necessary information you need to obtain your CHL and hopefully when you can use your weapon to defend yourself if the need arises. We also will give you your handgun proficiency test as needed to get your license. The cost for the course is $100. We accept cash, check, credit cards, gold and silver, and used guns. For information or to sign up, call Crockett Keller, 325-347-0055. If you are a socialist liberal and or voted for the current campaigner-in-chief, please do not take this class. You have already proven that you cannot make a knowledgeable and prudent decision as required under the law. Also, if you are a non-Christian Arab or Muslim, I will not teach you the class. Once again, with no shame, I am Crockett Keller, 325-347-0055. Thank you and God bless America.
No shame. I'm wondering if the radio station has shame in running that. thank you to a number of you, actually, who forwarded that clip to us and that funny little story that went along with it. We'll have it posted up on our blog, which you'll find a link to that I'll give out later in the program. All right. Well, actually, we're nearly at the end of the show, so it's time now to take a look at what's going to be happening over the next 7 days in propagation. Here's Dan Hensley.
The 10.7-centimeter flux for November 12th. 175, A index of 10, KP index of 3. On November 13th, 10.7 centimeter flux of 170, an A index of 5 all the way through the week, and a KP index of 2 all the way through the week to the 18th. On November 14th, we're going to have a 10.7 centimeter flux of 170 again. On November 15th, 10.7 centimeter flux of 160. November 16th, 10.7 centimeter flux of 160. November 17th, 10.7 centimeter flux of 160. On November 18th, 10.7 centimeter flux of 155. Sunspot groups 1338 through 1344 are in view as of November 10th, 2011. Sunspot group 1339 is the largest of these groups. Over the course of this week, we may possibly see an Earth-directed M-class flare from sunspot group 1339. good news is that the sunspot number is higher than it has been at any other time during solar cycle 24, with a count of 220. Enjoy the bands while you can. Back to you, Keith.
Well, thank you very much, Dan Hensley. And with that, we've come to the end of this edition of the program. If you wish to contact us, our email address is very simple. MNP, very simple, you see what I mean? MNP@PCJmedia.com. That's MNP@PCJmedia.com. You can also download this program as well as past editions of Media Network Plus by going to our website, www.PCJmedia.com/Media Network Plus, all one word. Or to make it simple, just put in PCJmedia.com and click on Media Network Plus. If you want to take part in lively conversations and find out what's coming up on future editions of the program, check us out on Facebook. Just do a search for PCJ Media, PCJ Radio, and add us on Twitter. You'll find all the details at our website. Now, December is just around the corner, and we're planning to do another one of our very popular bloopers shows. So if there's any of you right now that are listening and have recorded something very odd over the past year, forward it to us. We'd love to hear it. And you never know, we might just use it on the show. To close today, we're going to play a song that was requested by Yukio in Japan, who listens to us on the World Radio Network, because she heard that we put out a call for songs about radio that we may use on the show. Well, going out to Yukio today, here's REM and Radio Song. So on behalf of Paulette Macquarie and Dan Hensley, this is Keith Parron saying so long, take care, 73s to you all, and 88s to the ladies.
The world is collapsing around our ears. I turned up the radio, I can't hear it. When I got to the house and I called you out, I could tell that you had been crying, crying. It's that same song. That same song, the DJ sucks.